Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. First of all, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman Shlomo Ben Sara and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Ninekin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Mir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. You won't believe what they're trying to do now against the Hilltop Youth, the latest thing that they have, latest scheme that they have to try to stop the Hilltop Youth. And they're so determined not to let the Hilltop Youth succeed, because if the Hilltop Youth succeed, Israel will control Judea and Samaria, Yehuda v'Shomron. Israel will be in control of her biblical heartland, and there won't be a so-called Palestinian people. Of course, as we've mentioned many times on this program, and have proven in the past, there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, there's never been a Palestine or a Palestinian people in history, ever. It's all a bluff and a lie. But they want to create a so-called Palestinian state in Israel's biblical heartland, because it would push Israel to borders that are 6 to 9 miles wide, which is suicidal. Chas v'chalila, God forbid. And so, because the Hilltop Youth are the only force on the ground in Judea and Samaria challenging this, seriously challenging this, because all the other settlers, 500,000 Jewish settlers in Judea and Samaria, but they all live within 2.5% of Judea and Samaria. And so the plan is to leave the 500,000 settlers in the 2.5%, leave that untouched, and create a so-called Palestinian state in the rest of Judea and Samaria, over 90% of Judea and Samaria, which again pushes Israel back to 6 to 9 mile wide borders. So they want to stop the Hilltop Youth at all costs, because the Hilltop Youth have broken out of those of that 2.5%, and the Hilltop Youth have liberated dozens of strategic hilltops, and they control the high ground throughout Judea and Samaria. So they want to do everything they can to stop that, because if the, as long as the Hilltop Youth are there, the Arabs cannot create a contiguous Palestinian state. The Hilltop Youth are blocking the Arabs from connecting all their communities and creating a contiguous Palestinian state. And so what's the latest scheme to try to stop the Hilltop Youth? You won't believe it. They went to the Hilltop, they went to one of the Hilltop communities, Geulat Zion, which is one of the Hilltop communities that JTF has supported, by the way. They went to Geulat Zion, and they suddenly presented them with a bill. They said, you know, because we had to pay money, it cost us money to destroy your homes the last, because they destroyed their homes twice 5 months ago. 5 months ago, they destroyed everything in those communities. And so they said, because of the cost of the police and the destruction and everything else that we had to do to destroy your homes and to destroy all your property and to try to remove you from the hilltop so that the Arab terrorists can come and take over, because of the costs that we had for the Israeli police and for others in order to do this, all the costs that were incurred, we're going to bill you for all those costs. You're going to pay the costs of the destruction of your own homes. You're going to pay for the dozens of police we had to have there, and all the other forces we had to have there, and all the other things we had to do in order to prepare for the destruction of your homes. You're going to pay for this now. And of course, the end bill could be hundreds of thousands of shekels, which can come to hundreds of thousands of dollars as well. So, and you know, the Hilltop Youth in Geulat Zion and on the other hilltops, they don't have hundreds of thousands of shekels or dollars. Shekels, by the way, are one currency. The dollar is another currency. Of course, it's the currency that most of the people watching this program are more familiar with. But hundreds of thousands of shekels, they don't have that. They don't have money. The Hilltop Youth, instead of going out and making money and investing in bonds and stocks and having a portfolio and raising money and selling property and doing all the other things that all the other Jews aspire to do, they don't do any of that. They live in simple wooden one-room shacks and have given up their ability to make a lot of money because they're very intelligent. If they worked in high tech or in these other industries, they could make a lot of money. They're very intelligent, very well educated, very disciplined, and and they have let all of that go and live lives with virtually nothing in simple one-room shacks on hilltops, which sometimes from time to time are destroyed by the Israeli authorities who want the Arabs to take over the area. And so so with the little money they have, I mean, they may have $500 in their bank account. That may be their total asset. That may be the total their total assets in the bank, $500. And they're being told to pay hundreds of thousands to pay for their own destruction. And why are all these edicts, these terrible things being done to them by the Israeli police, the Israeli army, the Israeli establishment? Because they've committed the crime. What's their crime? Their crime is just saying Jews have a right to live in their own biblical heartland. There is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians. The state of Israel and the Jewish people have a right to sovereignty and living in Judea and Samaria in the biblical heartland of Israel. That's their crime. Jews are not allowed to settle in their own land. That's their crime. Their settling in their own land is a crime in Israel. They make it into a big crime. They're turning it into a big, into some sort of big crime. And they've done other things also to harass people. And they've even put some people in prison. They gave one very good Jew recently a one-month prison term on trumped-up charges. They said he was not properly performing his army. So they drafted him into the army, and then had soldiers come and destroy his home. He can't leave his wife and his children alone in the home without any shelter in the middle of the winter. So he went, and they said, you went to protect your wife and children on the hilltop while you're a soldier. You get 1 month in prison for that. I mean, these are just somebody. They put them, in other words, they put them deliberately in impossible situations, and force them to do things which violate the so-called Bolshevik rules that the Israeli establishment creates. They never do any of this to the Arab Nazis that want to destroy Israel. Never. They don't treat Arab terrorist mass murderers like this. Arab terrorist mass murderers are not told you're going to pay the bill for the destruction of your own homes. Or for Arab terrorist mass murderers are never treated like this. Arab terrorists have more rights in Israel than heroic Jews. You should be outraged over this injustice. You should feel this as if this happened to you. You really should. Because these noble heroes are fighting for all of us. And you should feel outraged as if somebody came and presented you with a bill, destroyed your home, threw your women and children, your wife and your kids out on the street in the freezing cold winter. In the rain, in the mud, in the freezing cold winter, threw them out. And then said, you got to pay for the destruction of your own home. We have to have dozens of police come to make sure. And so you got to pay the bill for all of this also. Because you dared to say that you believe Jews have a right to settle in their own land. Arabs, by the way, Arabs are building all over illegally, in violation even of the Oslo agreements. Even the horrible anti-Semitic Oslo agreements say that the Arabs are not allowed to build in Section C, in Area C. The Arabs have already taken over more than a third of Area C, and they're not allowed to even step foot in Area C, according to the Oslo Accords. And they've taken over a third of it with illegal building. Nobody touches them. Completely illegal building. Together with the European Union, U.S. State Department, George Soros, billionaires, Israeli leftists, all helping funding things that are flagrantly illegal. And nobody touches them. Nobody presents them with a bill. Nobody destroys their illegal building. Nobody touches it, and nobody presents them with any bills. Nothing. In fact, the Arab Nazis that murder Jews in Judea and Samaria and in Gaza, the Hamas terrorists and the Fatah terrorists, get free electricity from Israel, free water, free food, free housing, Everything for free. Nobody presents them with any bills. If they present them with the bill, they just rip the bill up. And nobody enforces anything against them. This is the Israel that the Erev Rav, that the mixed multitude traders that run Israel, the assimilationist, anti-Semitic, self-hating scum that run Israel, this is the Israel they want to create. An Israel of injustice, of wickedness, of suicidal behavior, of supporting our own enemies that want to destroy us and when they want to push the Jews into the sea. That's the Israel they want to create. The Hilltop Youth are saying, we don't accept that Israel. We want an Israel based on justice and righteousness and Jewish rights, including Jewish rights to our own homeland. We're not accepting this anti-Semitic double standard and these anti-Semitic rules that you've imposed upon us. We won't accept it. The so-called defense minister of Israel, Benny Gantz, may his name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. So-called defense minister of Israel, what a clown. What a joke he is. The Iranians hacked his personal cell phone. We're getting all the most secretive classified information from Israel that he has on his cell phone. The Iranians got it all. They hack everything he has. This schmuck, this imbecile, this coward, who is the so-called defense minister of Israel, and he's issuing orders against the Hilltop Youth, this pig who ran crawling on his belly to meet with the Arab Hitler, Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah, after Mahmoud Abbas, together with Arafat, murdered thousands of innocent Jews, and he crawls on his belly to meet with Abbas. He doesn't present Abbas with any bills or do anything against Abbas. Abbas and his allies in the European Union and the U.S. State Department, and among the self-hating Jewish billionaires like Soros, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to build all over Judea and Samaria illegally. That's fine with Benny Gantz, the so-called defense minister of Israel. But let noble, idealistic, magnificent young Jewish heroes try to build a community on a hilltop so that the Jews won't be placed in danger, so that Arab terrorists won't be on that hilltop, using that hilltop to fire on Jews and murder Jews. Let young Jews do that to protect the Jewish people, and they risk their lives doing that. Oh, that is terrible. That is unacceptable. You even have people in the Israeli media and Israeli politicians who call the Hilltop Youth terrorists. What terrorism? What are they talking about here? Terrorists for living in their own land. And we've given you instances where Arab terrorists come to attack and murder their women and children, and if they subdue the Arab terrorists and hand them over to the police release the Arab terrorists immediately. And if the Hilltop Youth had done something more to the Arab terrorists, which would have been really, in terms of real true justice, the Arab terrorist should be killed. He wanted to murder Jews, he should be killed. If they had done that, you know they would have been charged with murder and they would have gone to prison for the rest of their lives. And Jews that are in prison facing life sentences for killing Arab terrorists, Jews don't get out. They don't get out. They stay there for decades. Arabs who murder innocent Jewish babies get out in 2 or 3 years. They're released as gestures and in exchange for the bodies of Israeli soldiers who have been murdered. And just what an unbelievable outrage we have going on in Israel now. And by the way, it's not just this evil government that did this. Benny Gantz, by the way, is the defense minister in this current evil government, but he was also Netanyahu's defense minister. And Netanyahu and the Likud, they did terrible things to the Jews in Judea and Samaria as well. Despite that, we want this current government to fall. We want them to fall because we want to stop all of these very terrible moves that they're taking against the Hilltop Youth. Not that the Likud is any better, they're not. But we want the government to fall. We want there to be elections. During election periods, it's actually a period where there's less persecution of the Hilltop Youth, because to the average Israeli, when they take action against the Hilltop Youth, that's not popular among average Israelis. Average Israelis can't understand it. Average Israelis don't have the great comprehension that these Israeli statesmen and politicians who want to screw their fellow Jews and who want to give everything over to our enemies. The average Israeli doesn't comprehend this. What can you do? The average Israeli taxi driver, or the average Israeli who sells falafel, the average Israeli working guy or working woman, they don't understand this. They don't understand what's wrong with the Hilltop Youth. What's wrong with us living in Judea and Samaria? What the hell is going on? What is wrong with all of this? Why is it that Arab terrorists and Arabs who want to destroy us have all the rights, they can do anything they want, nobody ever touches them? But good Jews are persecuted and tortured. And by the way, they have literally, the Shabak in the past has arrested Jews, young Jews, teenagers, Jewish teenagers, who were innocent, who didn't do anything, and tortured them, and admitted it in court, and nothing happened. Tortured. If they had tortured Arab terrorists, oh, wow. That'd be an international incident. You know what all this proves? If we don't support the Hilltop Youth, look at how much is at stake here. Look at all that they're doing to stop these brave young Jews, and yet the brave young Jews are still there, and they're growing, and their hilltops and their communities are growing despite all this persecution. Now, when they come, if they present them with bills and so on, the Hilltop, I've spoken to the people in the Hilltops, and they've said that, so we'll go bankrupt. Which is, we're not paying anything. They won't get a penny out of us. They won't get a shekel out of us. They'll get nothing. But what a disgrace this is. And the little that they have, if they have $500 in their personal bank account, it's going to be seized, and the little they have, they're going to be harassed, and that won't stop them. These guys are not, and their magnificent, beautiful wives and their beautiful, brave children, they're not going to be stopped. They want to stay there. But look at what they're doing to try to, look at what they're doing to try to break the back of whatever Jewish presence we have in Judea and Samaria. How sick, how evil, how treasonous. Don't you dare be silent when you watch this. Don't you dare be silent. You watching this, you should decide, I'm going to start doing things right now to help the Hilltop Youth. I'm going to help them financially, and I'm going to try, and I'm going to, and those of you that can help by spreading our videos and spreading the word of our videos, that as well. Don't you watch this in silence. We've got to back them and support them. We've got to support these heroes. There are two ways that you can support the heroic Hilltop Youth, and that you can say no to the injustices that take place. And you could, and again, by the way, this should prove to us how essential they are. Look at all they're doing. Look at all the trouble they go through to stop them. Can you imagine if the Hilltop Youth weren't there? God forbid. Can you imagine what the situation would be like in Judea and Samaria and throughout Israel? There are two ways you can support the Hilltop Youth. Two ways you can be good Jews and righteous Gentiles. One is online. You go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. Now, the Hebrew main page, of course, is in Hebrew, but on top we do have a button in English, a donate button. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes you can very conveniently and generously help the Hilltop Youth. That's online. If you want to send checks or money orders, you can do that by making a check out to JTF and sending it through the mail to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Okay, let's go to our questions now, God willing, from our great JTFers. And we start out with Ram Sheva Sheva Efes, who writes to me in Hebrew. I'm going to quickly read it in Hebrew. I don't want to, for me to read it to you, most people don't understand it. Ram, ani lo חושב שכדאי לי להקריא את כל זה, כי הם לא, 90% מהאנשים שצופים בתוכנית הזאת לא מבינים עברית, אז אני אקרא את זה בעצמי, ואני אגיב לך ואני אתרגם. And I just told Ram that it doesn't make any sense for me to read it because now 90% of our people don't understand Hebrew, so what am I reading it for? Anyway, Ram writes to me about a Zoom meeting that we're going to have on the 12th of June, Bezrat Hashem, in Hebrew, and how people look forward to it, and and that we should pray for Refuah Shlema, for the wife of Moshe Lirafuah, oh no, the father of the wife, the father of the wife of one of our supporters in Israel, and it's Moshe ben Miriam, Refuah Shlema, Bezrat Hashem, Refuah Shlema, and that's basically Ram's message. Ram, אני מודה לך, ואני מקווה שהזום שלנו ב-12 ליוני יהיה הצלחה. אני מודה לך, רם. And now we're going to the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who writes, and I quote, "There is widespread misunderstanding in the Gentile world about Isaiah 53. Can you explain who the suffering servant is?" Okay, that's a great question. Hirvatsky always asks great questions. I have up here books on the... most of the books of the Bible. Do I have Isaiah here? Yes, I have Isaiah here. One of them is Isaiah. You don't see this, but up here I have books. Isaiah 53 speaks about suffering servant, and... let's see here. And of course, the Christian world, I think what Hirvatsky is referring to, of course, is the Christian world tries to interpret the suffering servant to be, they claim that this is a prophecy about Yeshu. Yeshu is the Hebrew way that we say Jesus. They claim this is a prophecy about Yeshu, which is completely absurd. There are no prophecies about Yeshu in the Tanakh, except for the commandment in the Torah that we're not allowed to worship, that we're not allowed to follow false prophets. There is one reference to it as, but to tell us not to believe in things like that. But anyway, there are no prophecies. The prophecies about the Messiah and the prophecies about future kings and the prophecies about current kings that you see throughout the Bible, none of them are about Yeshu. None of them. And, I mean, it's absurd to think that anyone who reads the Jewish Bible understands anything about Judaism. It's absurd to think that Judaism would prophesize about a religion that claims that their Messiah is God, that God became a human being and died on a cross. I mean, this is, in Judaism, this is considered to be idolatry. The thought of it is considered to be the height of absurdity and complete idolatry and completely against the Jewish concept of one God, one indivisible, unchangeable, perfect God. The idea that there's a Trinity and that God is split in three and that three is really one, and absurdities. It's all idolatry. It's all Avodah Zarah, idolatry. But anyway, let's look at the parts of Isaiah 53 to prove that the suffering servant could not possibly have been Yeshu. First of all, remember, the Christian religion says that Yeshu is God. They claim Yeshu is God. If Yeshu is God, how can they call him the suffering servant? You mean God is a servant? God is a suffering servant? It's absurd. God is not a servant to anything or anyone at any time. That in and of itself is completely irrational. And then look at the language here. Let me see if I can find it now. Okay, let's look toward the end of it. It says, "Yes, it pleased the Lord to crush him by disease." I'm reading the English translation from this in this book here. Anyway, yes, it pleased the Lord to crush him by disease, to see if his soul would offer itself in restitution, that he might see his seed prolong his days, and that the purpose of the Lord might prosper by his hand. Okay, let's think about the words we just read. That he may see his seed. That's what it's saying here. That's what it says in the Hebrew. That's what it says in the Hebrew and in the English. It says in Hebrew, Yere zera, see his seed. Yarich yamim, prolong his days, prolong days. Okay, why does that absolutely rule out Yeshu? See his seed means see his children. His children, his grandchildren, other generations that come from him. Yeshu didn't have any children. So automatically, anything talking about the seed, the seed automatically rules out Yeshu. He never had any children. And prolong his days. You mean Yeshu was in the world, wanted to prolong his days, wanted to live longer? That was why he came into the world, so that he could have a longer life? God came into the world like a human being and wanted to live a little longer, but unfortunately had to die younger? I mean, come on. This can't possibly be referring to Yeshu. It has no relationship to the Christian story. The Christian mythology about God becoming a man and dying on a cross has no relationship to any of that. Let's see. And then we got more. Of the travail his sword... the trail of his soul he shall see to the full, even my servant. One second. Therefore I will divide him. This is now verse 12 in Isaiah 53. Therefore I will divide him a portion among the great. You mean Yeshu receives a portion among the... He inherits a portion among the great. God inherits a portion among the great with other people, with human beings? God divides up portions with human beings. That's what God wants. That's God's aspiration, to be able to get a portion together with the great, to be counted among the great and get a portion with great human beings. That can't possibly be referring to the Yeshu of Christianity, which is Yeshu Christianity, they claim, is God himself. And he shall divide the spoil with the mighty. The spoil with the mighty. Yeshu wants to divide the spoils of war or inherit things in this world. That's what Yeshu, that's what God wants to do, because according to Christians, Yeshu, they claim Yeshu is God. That's what a God would want, to divide spoils and be counted among the mighty. And his seed after him can't possibly be referring to Yeshu. Isaiah 53 refers, there's a machloket, there's a difference of opinion among the Chazal, among the great rabbinic scholars. It could refer to the Jewish people, because the Jewish people were certainly God's suffering servant, and they certainly took on the transgressions of all humanity and paid tremendous price, and humanity's going to be punished for what they did to the Jewish people. Punished severely. Midah keneged midah, measure for measure. But the Jewish people, the Jewish people certainly can be referred to as God's suffering servant. So it could be the Jewish people, or it could eventually be the Jewish Messiah, but the Jewish Messiah. Because the Jewish Messiah, it says seed after him, and in other words, other generations that come from him, and children and grandchildren, others that come from him, and dividing the spoils and counted among the great. The Jewish view of the Messiah is that the Messiah will be a human being with a mother and a father, not some virgin birth or other completely pagan concepts that were all stolen from paganism. The Jewish Messiah will be a human being born of a mother or father, but a great leader who will miraculously, and a great prophet, who will miraculously convince the world to follow God's ways, and who will fight the battles of the Jewish people, and who will who will bring the Jews, there'll be kibbutz galuyot, he'll bring the Jews back to the land of Israel, the Jewish Messiah. When Yeshua was there, the Jews hadn't been scattered yet from the land of Israel. So how could he be the Messiah? The Messiah has to bring the Jews back. Yeshua didn't bring the Jews back. The followers of Yeshua are the ones who threw them out of Israel. Followers of Yeshua in Rome are the ones who threw the Jews out of Israel. And the Messiah has to build the Holy Temple. Has to rebuild the Holy Temple. While Yeshua was here, the Holy Temple was still standing. How could he rebuild the Holy Temple? The Holy Temple was still standing. The followers of Yeshua were the ones who destroyed the Holy Temple. The second one. So it could be the Jewish Messiah and the Jewish view of the Messiah. Or it could be referring also to certain kings who suffered tremendously. Or to certain prophets who suffered tremendously. Or a combination of all. It's a concept about what suffering servants of God go through. And what their reward will be in the end. If that includes the Jewish people, the Jewish Messiah, Jewish kings, Jewish prophets. But it can't include God himself. God himself is not a suffering servant. Thank you very much, Hirvatsky. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, welcome to Gay Pride Month. Do you think it's disgusting that liberals are pushing a gay agenda? Of course it's disgusting. And it's not just liberals. Donald Trump says that he was the most pro-gay president in American history. And I think there's something to that. So it's not just the liberals. Let's understand it. This is a horrible, horrible situation we're in. That really, it's just unbelievable. You know, in the 1960s, the gay organizations were called homophile organizations. They had organizations of gays, but they were called homosexuals. They were called homophiles. And they insisted in the 60s and in the 1970s, they insisted when they were asked about gay marriage, they said, no, same-sex marriage, that we're not asking for. We will never ask for that. We just want to be left alone. We're not interested in marriage. We're not interested in any other, in adopting children or anything else like that. We just want to be left alone. That was what they always said in the 60s and in the 70s. Look where we've come now. So even the homosexual organizations themselves didn't push this agenda then. And by the way, the homosexual organizations themselves were against the transgenders. They were embarrassed when they saw transgenders. They said, this doesn't represent us. We're not all a bunch of, men who are taking shots. I forgot what you call the shots to grow breasts. And doing other crazy things that people do nowadays, or surgery, sexual surgery to change sexes and things. We're not that. They don't represent us. The homosexuals were against the transgenders in the 60s, 70s, 80s. They were embarrassed by them. They got offended when people would say that the transgenders represent the homosexual movement. Now, if you dare say anything against the transgenders, anyone says anything against them, you dare do that, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, you can lose your job. Your business will be boycotted. All types of terrible things can happen to you. And in countries like Canada and countries in Europe, you can be arrested. You're not even allowed to have your opinion on that matter. Just speaking against them, you can be arrested. It's a crime. It's a hate crime. And Joe Gottfeld writes, and I quote, also, can you curse these gay people, Joel Gray, Michael Jackson, and Michael Feierstein? Thanks. My pleasure. I'm happy to curse all of them. There, Yimach Shmam v'Zechram Shem B'Rishayim Birkav. Absolutely, Joel Gray, that filthy, self-hating animal who supports all enemies, of course, of the Jewish people, and he himself is a disgusting, evil person. Michael Jackson, the child molester. He's still, you. People still, they play his music, they have it like as if he's a normal person. He was a child molester. He raped 14-year-old boys, including a 14-year-old Jewish boy. Raped them. And Michael Feierstein, Oh, he's the animal. I think he's the Broadway guy with AIDS. I don't even know if he's alive. I don't know if he died of AIDS or he's alive, but a real, unbelievable, self-hating piece of filth. The lowest piece of filth. Hates his own people, works against his own people on every issue. Horrible. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to Yimach Shmo to Islam. Since it's Gay Pride Month, discuss the following degenerates. 1. Liberace. Just to show you how bad things have gotten, Liberace denied that he was a homosexual, even though he was so effeminate. I mean, he was always so effeminate. Joan Rivers once said, "I don't need breasts. You don't need breasts to be effeminate. Just look at Liberace." That was one of her jokes. He was so effeminate and so obviously a homosexual. He ended up dying of AIDS. But he denied, to the day he died, he refused to say that he denied that he was homosexual. And not only that, to show you how different things are now, do you know that Liberace actually sued somebody for implying, for hinting that he might be a homosexual? Someone in England, he actually sued them. That's how different things were in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. That's how different things were in this country. And now, if you're heterosexual, you're considered to be abnormal. Okay, that's Liberace, who died of AIDS. And the second one is Rock Hudson, who also died of AIDS. Who also, by the way, denied to the day he, you know, was always denying that he was homosexual, always denied, always tried to deny it. 3. Michael Callan. Michael Callan, I know who he is. He also died of AIDS, by the way, Michael Callan. And he was the songwriter and the author, right? I think he died a long time ago. But he was the songwriter and the author, and he also died of AIDS. Okay, another great, glorious story. God gives him the ability to write songs and to be an author and gives him the ability to do those things. So he uses it to promote a lifestyle that leads to AIDS and that kills him as well in the end. Neil Patrick Harris. Yimach Shmo to Islam, I apologize. I don't know anything about Neil Patrick Harris. I don't know anything about him. And the fifth person on the list is Heath Ledger. And the Yimach Shmo to Islam writes, I know he wasn't gay, but he played a gay character in the movie Brokeback Mountain, unquote. Yeah, if he wasn't homosexual, but he promoted it, which is very, very evil, and to show how evil he was, and to show what type of character he was, he died in his 20s of an overdose of prescription medication. Why would someone in their 20s, a seemingly young, healthy actor, with everything to live for, making millions of dollars, famous, receiving all these awards, and Academy Award, I don't know if he got Academy Award, but he got all types of awards and things, and everywhere, people kissing his behind, and he's in his 20s, and he has so much medication, he's taking so many drugs, and he's doing it with a doctor, with a doctor's prescription, he's taking so many drugs, and in his 20s, he needs to take all these drugs, so he was taking so many drugs to the point where he died of an overdose. I mean, what does that say? What type of character is this? What a waste. And yes, he starred in a movie about homosexuals and promoted it. And I don't have to tell you that there's no shortage now of straight people, of normal people who, in their own sexual lives at least, are normal, are heterosexual. And yet they promote the homosexuals. They promote this. And if you promoting it is a great sin. Even if the person himself is not a homosexual, if you promote it and you support it and you encourage it, that's encouraging sin. That's very, very bad, very serious, very, very serious problem, and that leads to terrible punishment on the Day of Judgment. Thank you, Yimach Shmo to Islam. And now we go to our friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, discuss the following people. Bob Barker, former host of Price is Right. I think he was a Native American, if I'm not mistaken, by the way. And he must be like 100 years old now. Because I remember him when I was a little boy. I remember seeing him on television when I was a little... I don't watch television for many years now, but when I was a little boy, he was on TV many, many years ago. He must be about 100 years old now. Aside from that, I don't know anything about him. Drew Carey, who's the current host of The Price is Right. Okay, I didn't even know that, and I don't know. I don't really know much about Drew Carey. I know what he looks like. He wears glasses. I know he has glasses. But I don't know, aside from that, I don't know much about him. Maury Povich, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, the talk show host. Maury Povich, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. This is the lowest of the low. He had all types of shows and programs on television, including with Fox, where he promotes Hollywood immorality, sensationalism, everything decadent and depraved. And he's, of course, intermarried. He married the reporter Connie Chung. So he's intermarried. And one of the things he did, one of the interesting things he did in the 1990s, to show what a traitor he is, what a self-hating Jewish traitor he is, he interviewed the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who murdered thousands of Jews. Of course, Arafat murdered more Jews. Arafat and the PLO and Fatah murdered more Jews than any other group since the Nazis during the Holocaust. Thousands of Jews they murdered. And Maury Povich invited this mass murderer, Arafat, on his program and interviewed him and kissed his behind the whole time and was very positive and very supportive of Arafat. Scum! Scum! And the next person on the list is Ricky Lake, an actress and talk show host. I don't know very much about her, Benjamin. Jenny Jones, another talk show host. I don't know much about her either. Steve Harvey, the black talk show host. I know what he looks like. Oh, you know something? I do remember something about him. I just remember one thing about him. Actually, I remember two things about him. I remember him calling other blacks who criticized Obama Uncle Toms. He said, "You're not allowed to criticize Obama." And Barack Hussein, that's Barack Hussein Osama, of course, the black Muslim who was a supporter of Farrakhan. And the same Steve Harvey made racist remarks against Asian men. He ridiculed Asian men and he said, "What woman would ever want to be married to an Asian man?" And started ridiculing, making fun of Asian men. And by the way, hasn't hurt his career. Fine. Can you imagine if somebody had made fun of blacks, of black men, and said, "What white woman would want to be married to a black?" If somebody said that, would they have a talk show after that? Would they be in television? Would they be making millions of dollars? Look at the type of country we live in. That is true racism. That's true, a true example of racism. That whole situation there where you can't say anything about blacks, you can't say anything about Arabs, you can't say anything about Muslims, you can't say anything about homosexuals or transgenders. But you can trash Jews, you can trash Asians, you can trash whites. You can trash evangelical Christians. That's all permitted. There's no penalty for that. In fact, in the end, that long run, you'll actually be promoted if you do that. Benjamin now writes, "The following question has nothing to do with American Italians or other ethnic Europeans in the U.S. You're against Germans in general. Germany is a country and other countries are aligned with the Nazis during the Holocaust. Italy was aligned with Nazi Germany. Are you against the country Italy as a whole? Are you against Italians that live in Italy like you are against other European nationalities such as Germans and Croats? Do you view Italians who live in Italy different from other Europeans living in European countries such as England, France, or Spain? Or do you put them together with Germans, Austrians, Croats, and other nationalities that were Nazis?" Unquote. There's no question, Benjamin, that there were countries in Europe that supported the Nazis and participated in the Holocaust and wanted the Jewish people exterminated. And any Jew that doesn't hate those that participated in that is mentally unbalanced. I mean, not to hate people who wanted to exterminate your people and who murdered over 6 million innocent Jewish men, women, and children, you have to be mentally unbalanced. Italy was aligned with Nazi Germany. And Italy, in the early 1920s, is the first country that embraced fascism with Benito Mussolini. They elected Benito Mussolini, and he was very popular in Italy for many years, until World War II. World War II, when Italy was losing in the war, it became unpopular. But he was very, very popular for many years in Italy. And they did, they were one of the things that inspired the Nazi movement in Germany was Mussolini and Mussolini's success among the Italian people. That's one of the things that inspired the Nazis in Germany. So there's no question that that people are going to answer for that. Those who are responsible for that are going to answer for that. Of course, Italians who are not Nazis, whether they're in America or Italy or anywhere else, Italians who are not part of that are not guilty, and we don't hold them responsible. And we see, even on our own forum, we have, you mentioned Croats. The Croats viciously murdered tens of thousands of Jews during the Holocaust, horrific Nazis during the Holocaust. But you know that we have someone who comes from a Croat background on our forum who's a great Ben Noach and very good person. So obviously, people who do not embrace this and are not part of this and who reject this evil behavior, we don't hold anything against them if they reject this evil behavior. But those who engaged in the evil behavior, of course they're going to be punished. Of course. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And the next person on our great list of great JTFers is our friend Chicago Jew, who writes, "Your opinion of the Second Amendment," unquote. I think the entire Constitution is a brilliant document. It's not an appropriate document for the Jews in a Jewish state. We have our own laws in the Torah for the Jewish state. But for the Gentiles, I think that for Gentile countries and Gentile societies, I think it's a very good, I think it, a lot of it, at least a lot of it, is a very good model for what Gentile societies should be doing. And the Second Amendment does protect the right of citizens to bear arms, which I believe is absolutely essential. And I believe that a country that infringes upon the right to bear arms is not a free country. Is a dictatorial country. And so I think that the Second Amendment, I think that it's absolutely essential to defend the Second Amendment, and we as Jews must be especially concerned about the Second Amendment. Because if the Jews had been armed during the Holocaust, the results would have been very different. You wouldn't have had 6 million Jews murdered. I don't know how many would have survived, but it would have been 6 million would not have been murdered. It would have been a lot fewer than 6 million if all the millions of Jews had been armed and fought back and didn't just go to the gas chambers and ovens and go into the cattle cars and do whatever the Nazis told them to do. If they weren't obedient to their murderers, there's no question the results would have been very different. So the attempt to destroy the Second Amendment and destroy Second Amendment rights is very, very dangerous, especially for Jews. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to Roi, who also asks a question in Hebrew, but his two questions are very short and easy, and I think we can translate them pretty quickly. And they're different questions from what we were asked in prior weeks. So I will read this and translate, and it's very short. Roi asks, and I quote, "Ma da'atcha al hamatzav ha-politi b'Yisrael, ha'im ata choshev uve'ad she-hamemshelet ha-shinui tipol lenochach chok takanot chok Yehuda v'Shomron shelo avar b'kriya rishona, ha'im Gidon Sa'ar ya'arok la-memshala b'reshut Netanyahu o mishu acher me-halikud?" Okay. First question is, what is my view on the political situation in Israel? And do I think the current government should fall in view of the fact that a law regarding Judea and Samaria did not pass on the first call in the Knesset? And also, do I think that Gidon Sa'ar, who is part of the coalition government, current coalition government, will he leave and join a new government under Netanyahu or someone else from the Likud? Okay. I'm going to answer quickly in Hebrew and then in English. כמובן שאני רוצה שהממשלה הזאת תיפול. זו ממשלה אנטישמית שרודפת אחרי גיבורי הגבעות ואחרי אנשי יהודה ושומרון, וזה מסכן את עם ישראל כולו. גם הליכוד, גם ממשלת הליכוד עשתה זאת. אבל כעת הממשלה הזאת רודפת וכדאי לנו לפעול להפלת הממשלה הזאת. לגבי גדעון סער, הוא אופורטוניסט, הוא רמאי, הוא שקרן. אני לא יודע מה הוא יעשה. הוא אישית שונא את נתניהו, אז אם היה מישהו אחר שהיה יושב ראש של הליכוד, אני חושב שגדעון סער כן היה מצטרף אל ממשלת הליכוד, אם זה היה מישהו חוץ מנתניהו. אבל השנאה האישית בין גדעון סער לבין נתניהו, שנאה בוערת, אז קשה לי לראות אותו ישב בממשלת נתניהו. אבל לכו תדעו, אני לא בטוח. יש לי הרגשה שהוא לא היה מוכן לעשות את זה. את זה הוא לא היה מוכן לעשות, אבל לך תדע. And what I just said is that Gidon Sa'ar, that the government should fall, that it's an evil government, that as I said in my opening, it's an evil government that is persecuting the Hilltop Youth and other Jews in Judea and Samaria, and that endangers the entire Jewish people. And as far as Gidon Sa'ar is concerned, he hates Netanyahu on a personal level very strongly, so I have doubts that he would join a government headed by Netanyahu, but if there was someone else running the Likud or in charge of the Likud, I think he would join. And Roi now asks the second question, מה דעתך על יחסי ישראל-איראן לפני המהפכה ב-1979 באיראן? האם היה לגיטימי לקיים איתם יחסים דיפלומטיים או אפילו כלכליים לא רשמיים אז? תודה רבה. And he asks, what is my opinion on the relations between Israel and Iran before the 1979 Islamic Revolution? Was it legitimate then to conduct economic and other relations and diplomatic relations with Iran then? And I'll quickly answer in Hebrew and then in English. הבעיה היא, רואי, שאנחנו רואים מה קורה בסוף. היו לנו יחסים דיפלומטיים וכלכליים ואפילו צבאיים במידה מסוימת עם איראן לפני המהפכה האסלאמית, ובסוף מה שאנחנו עשינו עם איראן, בסוף מה קרה? בסוף ראינו שאיראן הפכה למדינה הנאצית העוינת ביותר של ישראל בעולם היום. אז אני חושב שזה מסוכן מאוד לקיים יחסים טובים עם מדינות אסלאמיות או מוסלמיות, כי בסוף אנחנו רואים שמה שאנחנו עושים, אם זה לטובת המדינות הללו, זה בסוף יעזור למדינות הללו כשיהיה שינוי, ושינוי נגדנו. ראינו את זה באיראן, ראינו את זה בטורקיה, ראינו את זה בעוד מקומות. אז אני חושב שזה מסוכן מאוד לקיים יחסים טובים או כלכליים או דיפלומטיים, בטח לא צבאיים, עם מדינות מוסלמיות. And I said that I think it's very dangerous for Israel to have good relations diplomatically, economically, and militarily with Muslim countries. We saw in Iran, for instance, before the revolution, Israel had a relationship with Iran, with the Shah at the time. But look what happened. The things Israel transferred the technology to them and did other things. The things Israel did with Iran, the deals they made, look, it ended up benefiting, and now it benefits the new regime which has taken over in Iran. This is what happens in Muslim regimes. You never know when a hostile, hate-mongering, dangerous terrorist regime is going to take over, which happened in Iran, happened in Turkey, and happened in other countries. So I think it's dangerous for Israel to have that type of relationship with Muslim countries, because in the end, the Muslim countries turn on you. That's the history that Israel has faced. אני מודה לך, רוי. And now we go to Kahana will always be right, our good friend, who writes, and I quote, comment on, and then there are five states listed here. California. California was like paradise in the 1960s, even in the 70s. Beautiful, beautiful state. It has such beautiful topography, California. And the weather in Southern California is the weather that I love. Dry, warm. I love the weather in Southern California. But look what happened. It's turned into a nightmare. Rabbi Kahana's predictions about California turned into, Rabbi Kahana warned that this was going to happen. California has turned into a nightmare. It's more than 60% non-white, first of all. So the third world invasion of California has transformed the state into a third world state. And now you have unbelievable miles and miles of homeless people all over the streets. You can't walk the streets, you can't go anywhere. The drugs, the homelessness, the gang-related violence and crime, and it's a nightmare. It's just a nightmare in that state now. And I think it's going to get worse. Connor will always be right. Writes now, asks now about Florida. Florida temporarily is under the control of Ron DeSantis and a Republican governor, just as California was under the control of Ronald Reagan and other Republican governors. But eventually that's going to change, because Florida is also undergoing an invasion from third world countries. But right now, temporarily, Florida is a little bit better than other states because it has not yet been completely taken over. And the next state is Texas. You know, Texas is majority non-white already. But the whites there are so conservative, and the whites are still the majority of voters, because some of the Hispanics and Asians and others who have been flooding into Texas are not citizens yet, so they're not voting, and they don't vote in the same numbers. They don't vote in high numbers. So Texas is still a majority conservative state, but barely. It's right near the tipping point of becoming another California. And eventually, unless something very surprising happens, eventually that's going to happen, unfortunately. Texas, by the way, has no state income tax. There are a lot of wonderful things about Texas, but that, again, that's all subject to change as the demographics change. New York. He asks about New York. New York is a hellhole. I live in New York. I live in New York 65 years. I'm 65 years old. I live in this horrible place. It's a hellhole. It's a Bolshevik hellhole. California is also a Bolshevik hellhole now. New York and California are controlled. Two-thirds of the voters there almost automatically vote Democrat. The absolute control of the left in New York and California makes them pretty much basket cases. And the final state that's being asked about here is Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, parts of Pennsylvania certainly are starting to go, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, horrible places. So there are real problems in Pennsylvania, and it's starting. We're seeing the decay in Pennsylvania as well. But it has not yet been completely overrun, so it's better than a state like New York. But again, problems. There are problems there, and it's getting worse, not better. Sorry to give such a negative prognosis, but that's how I see it. Thank you, Kahana will always be right. And now we go to Am Raphael, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your favorite Hasidic sect? And can you talk about the Vilna Gaon? Okay, great questions, Am Raphael. And Am Raphael usually asks very good questions. My favorite Hasidic sect has to be Chabad, the Lubavitch, because they do love the Jewish people. I don't agree with them on them having Chabad houses all over the world. I think that all Jews belong in Israel, so I do not agree with them on that issue. But they certainly love the Jewish people, and and are loyal to the Jewish people, and they're against any surrender of Jewish land in Eretz Yisrael. They're again. They and by the way, the Chabad in Israel support the Hilltop Youth. So, they're my favorite. They are my favorite. And Am Raphael writes, can you talk about the Vilna Gaon? The Vilna Gaon was an unbelievable genius. Gaon, by the way, means genius. In one of the translations for the word Gaon in Hebrew, from Hebrew to English, is genius. And he really was a genius. One of the things that he predicted that I thought was, I could talk about quite a few things about him, but one of the things that he predicted that I thought was really amazing, he told his students, his followers, to go to the land of Israel, because he said when we had 600,000 Jews came out of Egypt, and when we have 600,000 Jews living in the land of Israel again, when we reach that number 600,000, there's going to be a Jewish state, we're going to have Jewish sovereignty, and the redemption will begin. How many Jews were there in 1948? This, and he said this 200 years ago. How many Jews were in Israel in 1948 when the state of Israel was created? 600,000. When we reach that number, just as the Vilna Gaon had predicted 150 years earlier, when we reach that number, the Jewish state was recreated after 2,000 years. What a genius. What a great leader. What a genius. He also made predictions that about the revolutions would come to change Europe from 1840 to 1880 for a 40-year period, and that 40-year period of revolutions, he made this prediction like around 1800, 40 years before, which, of course, predicting things 40 years into the future is very hard to do. But he predicted from 1840 to 1880 there would be tremendous changes that would take place that would create the atmosphere that would enable us to bring the redemption. And, of course, those changes did take place in Europe, and the Jews came out of the ghettos, and that is what led to the creation of a Zionist movement that eventually created a Jewish state, and that will indeed bring us the final redemption. Thank you, Am Raphael, and I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing with all of our great JTFers, another program of Ask JTF. On the one hand, it hurts me to see that the Hilltop Youth do not receive the support that they deserve, because they should be supported by the entire Jewish people. All the Jews should be with them, fighting the battle together with them. But on the other hand, I'm so grateful that we have a group of Jews like this, pure, idealistic, magnificent Jews that give us every reason to be proud. I'm so grateful for them. They inspire me every single day. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.